Hello, you're listening to Skip Intro from BFM Radio. Today we are doing a special spoiler cast for X-Men Dark Phoenix, I believe the 10th movie in Fox's X-Men franchise.
The X-Verse.
They never call it the X-Verse.
Why? They should call it the Triple X-Verse.
There's no name for it.
It's just the X-Men. No, that's a different thing. Ice Cube and Vin Diesel have that one sewn up.
Oh, that's true. You're right. Yeah.
So, yeah, Dark Phoenix is a little bit of setup. This is basically taking on one of the most well-known and like longest, oldest storylines in comics, the X-Men Dark Phoenix from 1960s?
Is it the 60s?
60s, 70s? Oh. So essentially, in this story, the X-Men are already kind of well-established. Jean Grey goes on a mission to help some people who are on a shuttle, which they still use in this, which was nice, and interacts with the Phoenix Force, and things kick off from there. If you haven't seen the movie, stop listening now. We are going to spoil large segments of it, like who Jessica Chastain is, what's going on with the Phoenix, how does this tie into the other movies? And who dies? Why is it set in 1995? Don't answer that last one. I have no idea.
Yeah.
But starting with that, I got a weird... It's 1970s, right, with the kid first?
75 or 77,
and then
maybe.
It begins, the story,
yes.
Actually, the present day is 95, which for those of us of a certain age, that feels like not that long ago. It's like, oh, I'm so old.
I mean, like, you know, they had the first two or three, and they were all in their own decades. I get that.
Yeah.
But the 90s just happened.
Even you say this.
I was a baby. Yeah. That just happened. And to have that...
It's just 5 years before the original X-Men from 2000. And yet,
oh, wow.
A lot's going to happen in those 5 years.
That's
based
true.
Upon
yeah,
this
yeah,
movie.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Not only that, but a lot of things are going to unhappen.
Yeah.
And re-happen.
Yeah, I always like to start a spoiler cast with, Jean's dead. And so's... But Jennifer Lawrence is less dead and more that she had a terminal case of contractual obligations.
Well, okay, so... Let's be perfectly fair. Raven and or Mystique, whoever she may be, is dead.
Yeah.
Pretty much like at the end of Act 1.
But she's had like what? We had First Class. We had Days of Future Past. Days of Future Past was the second one in this series, right?
Yes.
That was so good.
Yeah.
Then you had Apocalypse.
Which was so bad.
I keep thinking there's another one I'm missing. Okay, so four. So that's generally one more than the contract is usually for like either
three,
unless you're Marvel, in which it's 27 or 22.
But it's post-Marvel, so
yeah.
Then there are no rules anymore.
Oh, yeah, no, but her contract would have been signed before.
Yeah.
So that would have been just tying for three. Michael Fassbender and James McAvoy seem to be like being able to do other stuff. They seem to be able to have no problem doing other stuff and like to pop in and out of here, whereas Lawrence always seemed to burn a little brighter.
I just think that she just wants to move on.
Jennifer Lawrence.
I don't think there needs to be any sort of bigger problems with this. I just think she's done.
Yeah.
She just wants to move on, I think. For me, the one, if we're talking about behind the scenes sort of stuff, the one thing I'm kind of surprised with is the fact that Sophie Turner wants to go back and do another character role. Like, I would have thought after 10 years of Game of Thrones, you'd want to go and do a one-off romantic comedy, a one-off drama, and not like do four.
But
this is what happened to J-Law, though. This is basically things like, I've done Game of Thrones. There's no guarantee my next job is going to do... I could act my heart out and it could just sink or swell. So let's just sign up for these three X-Men movies and that keeps the money going in while I figure out what else I'm doing. And I can shoot them on the summer when I'm on break.
I mean, she doesn't know... She hasn't done a role outside of Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Is that right?
She might have popped up in something smaller, but like, I don't... She had much time.
So she doesn't technically do anything other than character acting.
Huh.
And, okay, I mean, to be honest, she was boring in Apocalypse. I mean, Apocalypse is boring as a whole, but she doesn't want to be there.
Apocalypse was directed by Bryan Singer, right?
Yeah.
Which is so, I know, yes, problematic, but also, like, there seems to be, like, there's not only a gulf of time, there's a gulf in, like, planning, talent, and everything between X-Men and X2 and that. I mean, like, you would say, like, oh, we're going to do Apocalypse. And you think, wow, that's, like, so far from the leather jumpsuits and you're expecting yellow spandex and kind of the constantly hinting at Sentinels and never actually getting there and then doing Apocalypse and getting Oscar Isaac to do it and then make it look so bad.
Yeah.
You're looking at Sophie Turner's IMDb page, are you?
No, I'm looking at the X-Men IMDb page and I'm just like, they went... And you know what I just figured out? I just realized. The reason we all really like X-Men First Class is because it was Matthew Vaughn directed it.
Yeah. And it has a kick-ass soundtrack. And I think it has a lower budget, but they use it wisely. And they rely on those character moments. Like they work on Charles and Magneto working together. The whole thing of just get out of my mind, Charles. I just love every time he says that.
It's a character piece, right? Yeah. Compared to what this is, which is just a piece.
Well, I think we'll get to that. But I think the scene in First Class where Magneto goes to Argentina to find the Nazis. And he's doing the thing where he's like having a beer, speaking in German, and then like he throws the knife at one guy, retrieves it with his magnetic powers, and throws it at another guy while threatening another guy is just, it's a brilliant little tiny set piece. Apocalypse went way too big. But I think this brings it back down. I was surprised how much I enjoyed this movie.
I enjoyed this movie. Actually.
Especially the trailers made it look like it was going to be, there's an inherent problem with the Phoenix storyline in that it's basically, oh, this woman gets powerful and then goes mad. And that's problematic for many reasons. And I think the movie doesn't help it in that it would have been good when Jean flees people because she's a danger to them if the camera had stayed with her instead of staying with everyone else.
Mm.
Because then you'd actually be with her and feel her as a character. Because I don't think Sophie Turner has had a chance to be Jean Grey as a character. They were like ex-babies in the last one, right?
Sophie Turner is not a good Jean Grey.
Yeah, I'm...
But I don't think Famke Janssen was either.
She was better than Sophie Turner.
Like, none of them have been... Jean Grey's a very hard character to do. In the comics now, they have, like, I think, multiple versions of the same character from different time periods running around because no one's got a handle on the character and they can just write her whatever way they want.
I think Famke Janssen's version of Jean Grey was an older Jean Grey. This one, I don't know where this is going. I've always liked the character of Jean Grey in that she was always I'm harking back to the cartoons, right? There was the teams always had a balance to them, right? Storm's the actual leader in the group. Scott is the pretend leader. Jean Grey is the one that will keep Scott in line. Wolverine is just Wolverine.
Wolverine's there for a bit because he has to go off because he's in every book. He's on every team.
Yeah, and then there's Beast. But
who's the brains,
right?
And the
beauty. So even in the cartoons, there was always a downplaying of Jean Grey. She was always Scott's girlfriend, partner, wife, whatever.
Yeah.
And
she was never really in control of her powers most of the time. That's always a big part of starting the X-Men.
That's always a big part of her thing. And I think in some of the comics, it was all actually quite clearly stated that she's actually the strongest mutant in the universe. So
she's an Omega level.
Yeah, she's right up there. So with regards to this movie, I think it's a good start to where they want to bring her, but I don't know how they're going to bring her there.
I've got some bad news. She's now dead, and also Disney bought them over, so they probably have no concerns about continuing this particular.
That was something else we spoke about at the end of the movie, where I leaned over to you and I was like, do you think they're going to start over?
I think that I said this to you before as well. It's so much money and it's so much commitment to, as a studio and to your fans and your viewers, to start all of this over again. Because First Class was 2012 or 2010 maybe. That just happened. And to have to start it over. I love James McAvoy and Michael Fassbender as the two of them. And I kind of like some of the cast in this.
Because Holt, the better boy, is always good.
Yeah, he's great.
I also like Storm.
I love Storm.
Oh, really? Because again,
Alexandra Shipp is great.
She only popped up in the last movie. Like, she wasn't in before. She wasn't
and she
in
didn't
the first
get a chance to.
Yeah, she didn't get a chance to do anything. Yeah. And Angel got like wasted in that movie as well. Yeah.
To be honest, I was very excited when this new little team, the OG team, but as babies, came up in the last one.
It's so disappointing we didn't get that deleted scene in the mall. That would have helped solve a lot of things. Did you see that?
No.
In Apocalypse, there's a scene where they steal the car and go to the mall, and they're going around and they're looking at like. They're looking at like albums from Dazzler and like mutant bands and stuff.
Oh, wow.
So they had a whole, and it's also just like kids in the mall, which would have just been cool, but they cut it for time, unfortunately.
There's a bit when they come out of the cinema and Jean goes, well, everyone knows the third one's bad anyway. Like,
that's what they're coming out of Empire Strikes Back, I think. Yeah. So,
I don't know. I think Sophie Turner is not a good enough actress, or maybe she wasn't, doing her best in this one, but not a good enough actress to hold a film as the main pro-tag, antag, whatever. But she's not strong enough.
Yeah, you're right. But also, I think Ian's got a good point in that they don't really know what to do with these characters, right? They don't know what to do with Jean Grey. And also, in some ways, I also double down on what you said. You want to watch how Jean Grey is reacting to all these problems that she's doing, as opposed to just see him as like some flippant little girl who's just angry, throws her toys around and leaves the room.
Yeah, and everyone then just talks about her, which is really kind of not great as opposed to trying to talk to her. They do, it's a journey for the characters to go on. But in the comics, Jean Grey gets her powers, flies off into space and just like and tries them out for a while. Yeah. No, the comic stays with her.
No, I mean, as in, she disappears from the characters.
Yeah, from the main cast. But, like, the story stays with her. Yeah. And, like, she goes off and she's, like, reveling in her power and devours a planet. Biggest shock of this movie was that they brought the Debari in, which was, like, when this... There's a point where just... It seems apropos and nothing. There's just these... You're just like, oh, there's the moon. Oh, it just split in three and now it's landing. What the hell is this? And I was like, they can't be doing the space thing, right? Because a big part of the Dark Phoenix storyline is that she gets so powerful, she becomes a threat to the whole universe. And Marvel has... space people like the Guardians of the Galaxy, and a big part of that as well is the Shi'ar Empire, who are bird-like and warlike people who come along and say we have to kill the Phoenix. That's a big, I think, that's a cover one of the comics, the Phoenix must die, right?
Yes.
So when you start seeing spaceships, I mean, it got my hopes up, and when they mentioned the Debari, which I had to do for research, they're the race that Jean essentially eats. I mean, that's where the point where she turns full supervillain, she destroys a planet and eats the whole thing.
So I think that's the other thing as well, there's a slight, I want to say, disconnect between the comic version of Dark Phoenix and this movie's version, right? The movie version is, they're saying that the Phoenix Force did all these things, but that was before the Phoenix Force found Jean Grey.
And I think they've come around to that in the comics for every, as an excuse to bring Jean Grey back all the time. So when a version of her dies, it's like, oh no, this is a copy of the Phoenix Force made. It's like, well, this time it's definitely Jean. And then a week later, it's like, well, actually, no, the Phoenix made a clone, and then that was that one that died, and she's safe. Like, they come up with all these reasons, but the Phoenix Force is... They have come around on that idea as well of it being a force, and like in when they do future flash forwards, different characters can inhabit it. But, you know, power corrupts absolutely. So it's nice to see someone other than Jean Grey go mad with the power. I mean, he's like, oh, it can happen to anybody. It could happen to you. But I did like the fact that they brought that level of it in. I did get my hopes up that we would get to see weird, the Shi'ar are weird looking even for the 70s. So I was sad when they didn't turn up. But these movies are so grounded that I don't think it could work.
My issue so far with this film is that the Phoenix Force isn't terrifying enough to be a force to be reckoned with. I think that was my big issue with it. And just... then having the Debari just, you know, covet this force and do so much to try to get this force back, just it wasn't enough for me. I
wonder as well if it's a homage to when they did the Phoenix storyline in X3, The Last Stand.
Yes. Right?
Back then, the hot new special effect was particle effect. So the Phoenix Force then was basically, I'm going to particle effect you to death. In this, whenever she's doing anything, everything behind, like the wallpaper, she's really good at getting old wallpaper off. Mm. But it's like that and the wispy lines of red on her face, that's garbage.
Yeah, I think I'm
show me, let her walk around on this one. Fire.
Yeah, like I don't see what, she just seems like an angry character, angry girl. She's just throwing her powers around when this Phoenix thing is supposed to be universe ending, you kind of want to see a bit more, right?
Yeah. So for me, it kind of only justified itself when it was more of a character thing. You know, the thing with Professor X, how suppressing the memories, that one I understood. It was more harking back to X3, stuff like that. That one was cool. When it brings in the alien thing, it got too big and the stakes weren't high enough for me, I think.
The dangers weren't high enough. Although I will say, I did like the whole Professor X thing.
I loved it.
Professor X was essentially the villain in this piece. Yes, right?
And I think that's something, maybe it's 90s, 2000s, where they're like, the X-Men chucked him out. Like, the Jean Grey school comes up way later, but like they did chuck him out at one point.
Oh, that's a comic thing.
Yeah, but they did throw him out, I think, at one point because there was also an awful lot of other manipulation he'd done of the team behind the scenes that were like, you're actually kind of awful. We don't want to do anything with you.
So I like that idea of him doing wrong things for the right reasons and being the villain of the piece. I didn't like the fact that he, found his senses. You know, like he
grows a person. Yeah, I hate it when that happens.
Yeah, I want to see him just sort of like double down on that, like, because the comics, that's what he did, right? Yeah. Like you said, he didn't just do it to Jean. He did it to a lot of characters. He did it to Wolverine. I think did he do it to Scott Summers as well?
Probably Scott's
so bland now that his brain's probably just been fried. And I like that idea that
if you just look up Scott Summers in the dictionary, it just says, see vanilla ice cream.
Yeah. So I like that Professor X was the villain in this one.
I think also it's the blockbuster thing, right? They have a limited script in all the action, yeah. So they're going to have to do something. Maybe they can't leave it open-ended because maybe they were expected Dark Phoenix to tank and there wasn't going to be another one.
I was expecting it to tank and I was surprised just how, like, even the characters worked. As there's moments where I think Nicholas Holt said we're the last of the first class. And for all his sins, Hans Zimmer's score does work most of the time for me. There was moments in there that I did like super like. I mean, just seeing Fassbender not manage to break into an Irish accent when he's doing Magneto is always fun. Like, he's failed in other movies, but I think he's nailed it this time. And, you know, when he goes to get the helmet, you know he's going to put the helmet on. But going to see, and like, you know, it's the only thing in that case he needs. Like, well, I get my cape first, or I get my magnetic boots. It's like, no, it's the helmet. When you see that, maybe that's just my nostalgia now kicking in for the 90s. I didn't realize that I had so much. But or even just for First Class, because it's the same helmet design from First Class. And that's a cool looking helmet.
You know, just when you said that, I've just realized this is probably the least campy X-Men.
Yeah.
It's the we said this after the film as well. It's the most normal film.
Yeah. And
the soundtrack is like a dirge.
And that's taking...
That kind of keeps the tone down as
well. Yeah, yeah. Taking what Julian was saying into account, the fact that this is the one where they're actually wearing the blue and yellow, the blue and gold suit.
It was
suit.
Nice to see.
They had the what's it called, the Blackbird?
It wasn't really. The Blackbird looked more like a Blackbird, I think, in First Class. I didn't like what they did with the X-Jet in this one. It was a bit different.
This looks a lot more like the cartoon version.
Maybe they were going for more for the cartoon aesthetic. But the suits were a weird mix, weren't they? Is that the 90s look? I can't remember. I think
it's an updated retro version of what the... Of what the cartoon version, because the cartoon version, the X was right across the chest.
Yeah,
that was that was.
Yeah, they should have worked.
That was
in,
great as a toy.
And they should have worked in somewhere. Zimmer should have just copied the 90s.
I'm surprised they didn't go into it. Maybe they don't have the rights to it. I don't know.
Maybe that adds into the less campiness. Yeah. I love the X. I've always loved the X-Men since I was a kid because of how campy it was, I think. And
from the cartoons?
I love the cartoons. I love the Brett Ratner ones in the same way.
Wait. There's only one Brett Ratner one, isn't there?
No, he's done several, dude.
All three of them he did.
Which one? He did X-3.
Your life for you.
He did Origins, did he? X-Men Origins Wolverine?
Okay, so Brett Ratner did X-Men The Last Stand.
Okay, that's X-3, yeah.
Yeah, and... Oh, no, he only did that one.
Oh, okay.
Ratner only did one.
Okay.
So you just went, as you were a kid, you just watched it in different chunks. At one point, I seriously thought Empire Strikes Back was three different movies.
Oh, honestly, that's true.
Because there's a snow bit, and then there's the other bit, and then there's the weird freaky puppet bit.
Well, I mean, okay, so going back. As a kid, I loved the three X-Men films in the same way that I love Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man. It's just, you know, a little bit wild. It's fun as a kid. And X-Men has always been very fun just because it has a lot of powers. There's opportunity to play.
I have a question. Did you watch it when it first came out?
Yes.
How old were you when you watched
it? Oh, maybe I watched X2 and X3, but not X1 when I was a kid.
Okay. Yeah, whereas I was like going to the cinema to see this movie and being like, please don't mess it up, please don't mess it up, please don't mess it up, please don't mess it up. Oh my God, Ian McKellen's amazing!
It's nice going in with no expectations as a kid. So, the First Class, Days of Future Past, Apocalypse can die in a fire.
Yeah.
But like, they are...
Oh no, come on. My bet for dying in a fire is X-Men Origins Wolverine. I would rather that die in a fire
than
Apocalypse.
That's maybe fair.
Sorry, as you were saying.
Actually, no. X-Men Origins Wolverine is like stupid and fun enough now. Really? The Ryan Reynolds level of stupidity is maybe enough to maybe...
Well, he's in it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Maybe.
I would
maybe watch that for fun, like maybe drunk a little bit.
No, I think even watching the trailer, I think it's... He does the thing where he's doing like a chain of the helicopter. It just looks dumb, right?
Yeah. No,
I can see it in my brain.
Yeah.
But like Apocalypse, I just never want to see again.
Yeah,
Apocalypse is
bad cosplay.
Yeah. And I watched it again... because I completely forgot it for Dark Phoenix.
Yeah.
And so what First Class and Days of Future Past did, and this new reboot series bit, they've made it, it's still campy and hammy, but it's
the
like
originals
serious.
Were campy and hammy, by the way. When we were growing up watching that, when I was going to see those original movies, it's like, this is coming on the back of Blade. I mean, it's X-Men. Blade had a certain amount of impact, but 2000's X-Men kind of kickstarted this whole superhero thing that's, you know, that we all... slaves to now, but like it's not
I never
campy.
Liked it.
You didn't like it?
No, God, no. That That Wolverine fight on top of the Empire
State.
No, not Empire State.
Statue of Liberty.
Yeah. No, dude.
But cool things like in that movie, movies, there were
the
little man with the metal keeps attacking me. What an idiot. Like Magneto is constantly screwing with Wolverine, and I think that's brilliant. And like he has to stab himself in the chest in order to release himself.
Yeah. But that was great.
But it's also like the first. You know what I mean? No. It was a limited budget. You know, you can tell very clearly when they're like, you know, doing things a small set.
And I think that's the other thing, right? You're young enough that when you saw it, you thought it was cool. You're old enough to think through the budget and all these things.
Goldilocks.
Yeah, I'm at that age, right? Because I just came out of reading the comics and going, what is this filth?
You were an edgelord, was it? Comics edgelord.
Because I did not like it. I thought that was terrible.
Because when you talk about the camp, like I was reading in secondary school, they were called the essentials. They were just collected editions. Yeah. So instead of like, you're reading one or two issues, you're getting a whole load of them. So you can read the entire saga of the Dark Phoenix over a week. And you know, you have to get past the costumes and the 70s space stuff and like the Shi'ar Empire, which has like these warriors who like have massive mohawks and are blue, and everyone's got they're evolved from birds, so they're all weird looking, and like, but the core storylines of what's going on there and the discussions they have while all this is going on is all very grounded. I think the 2000s movies kind of tried to keep that grounding because they were afraid audiences would just react and say, oh, that looks like the old Superman movie. I don't want to see that. It looks old.
So basically just saying that this new run feels the most like a normal movie.
Mm.
It's a normal blockbuster. It's not too costumey, maybe.
I agree. Yeah, I like that. Yeah. I like that.
I do. I mean, it'd be a pity that I don't have to do another one, but I do want to get them to the Grant Morrison. They rebranded as basically, we're not superheroes, we're a rescue organization. They kind of hint a little bit with this, with the X-Phone. The president can call them direct for one time, and then when he calls them back, they're like, oh, this phone's been disconnected because we hate you after like the last 20 years of peace between humans and mutant kind. We're done.
Yeah.
I like that a lot in this new one so far. I mean, the series, X-Men has always done that, right? Like that's the whole thing.
Yeah.
But I liked how they did it. And especially building off of what happened in Days of Future Past, I think there was just enough in Dark Phoenix as a subplot, kind of as what the mutants are as a whole.
Yeah, because there was a whole thing with like, you know, they basically saved Nixon, right? And he was kind of cool with them. Like mutants were out. In the originals, it was always kind of, they're kind of coming out. But in this, it's like, no, they've been out since the 70s. Everyone knows about them. I think after First Class, everyone's cool with them. Then they're not again. Then they are again. Then they're not again. So, I mean, that does, the way you see politics going back and forth between left and right all the time, I guess that makes a lot more sense now than it made when I was first watching these movies.
Mm.
But it works, I think. I don't think it doesn't feel cheap at all. I think the whole thing with who Jessica Chastain is, I always thought she might be Sublime's character they invented in the comics, who's like an organism that's been with humanity all the time but constantly wants to get rid of us. I quite liked the DeBarry thing. I thought they were going to give an easy out to Jean where she would take all her power and make her human again, but like it wouldn't have worked if they'd done that. I think they really need to, Jean Grey must die if it's the Dark Phoenix, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if they're going to kill her off. I'm wondering if it's going to be one of those things where in the next film she's just like, oh, I've just been hanging out in space for 20 freaking years.
Well, you remember that the first excuse in the comics was that the Phoenix cloned her and that she was resting safely in an egg at the bottom of the Hudson Bay.
Oh God, that's right.
Yeah.
Weird spaces, man. And I think, and I will echo Julian on this. I went into this movie really reluctantly.
The trailer looked awful.
The trailers made it look awful. I was expecting this to be a dumpster fire on the level of Apocalypse. But then, as I was sitting there, I was going, huh, this is more grounded than I thought it was going to be. This is less superhero-y, it's less costumey, and I like that.
I think, you know, there's a fight outside a house with some buses and stuff in New York. Was it New York? Anyway, that was a small-scale fight that didn't feel cheap.
Mm.
A lot of the movie didn't feel cheap, like, or like we'll put in special effects to cover stuff up later.
I will say that in the train sequence at the end, I was losing track of how many trains they were on.
Oh, the train thing as well. I mean, you talked about the power of the Phoenix earlier. I love these aliens who travel they can travel the stars and come all the way from their dead homeworld to planet Earth looking for the Phoenix. And when they're attacking a train, they just start throwing bits of the train. Like, they don't have any guns. They just literally, like, throw themselves or bits of the train at the X-Men, especially the guy who can control metal. It's like, are they the aliens of the Simpsons where you can just chase them off with a plank with a nail in it?
So for me, the train sequence was probably my favorite bit of the whole film, because it was the scene in the whole film where I got to finally see each of their powers in full force and in the coolest ways. So Magneto has an incredible bit when he's, you know, doing
the
thing.
He does several incredible
bits.
Magneto's cool. That's the biggest problem. When you get Michael Fassbender, it's really hard to like, by the way, he's a homicidal maniac, but he's cool.
No, but like,
and you get the mutantness of it, and it's great.
It makes me want to dig out my find out where that T-shirt is that says Magneto was right that I have, because that's cool to wear.
So the first scene in this film and the train scene, I think you get to see, you know, the X-Men go. You get to see them all working in tandem with their own
as the X-Men.
Is this Simon Kinberg's first directing X-Men one?
Yes,
because I think what got me, one of the moments that got me was them all saying, "You human dudes are screwed. You need our help. Let us out." And like even what, Nightcrawler's tail, they have a special little thing to lock his tail up.
On Nightcrawler, Nightcrawler is, I think, one of my favorite X-Men. And he's never been able to, like, they've never used him properly.
Apart from that, in X2, when he has that whole attack on the president.
Not even enough. You have Alan Cumming and you don't even.
Yeah.
You don't even use Alan Cumming the way you should use Alan Cumming. Yeah.
And but that whole scene, when you see that in the cinema, and that whole scene of him, like, he's spinning through a wall, then comes through the wall, then hits a guy in the face, then jumps and spins. Like, that was genius. And they felt like they were building towards that. Like, he picks up that knife and he goes to town on Jessica Chastain. Yeah. As like, oh, you're getting cut from all over. You're getting cut from places you didn't know you could get cut from.
I think I wish they'd gone onto Nightcrawler a bit more. I think, because his backstory is really quite interesting.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
But they kind of, Storm and Famke Janssen meet him in a church and you get the horrid backstory there. Yeah. But in this new series, they have him
he's introduced in Apocalypse and he... he's in Apocalypse because he's a
kid.
He's a teenager in Apocalypse and he was a fighting, mutant fighting ring sort of deal.
He was forced to fight.
That's where they meet Angel, is it? Because I forgot about that because I didn't care.
He's got a really sad backstory from the comics. But I think my main thing was that in the train fighting sequence, I wasn't quite sure like how many trains they were on. They suddenly spread out quite a bit and suddenly Magneto's in his own train car.
A director, they did. They don't do spatial awareness very well. They try.
Is hard. Yeah. Train is hard to do spatial awareness.
Yeah, it's one big long line with your characters on it.
there was no thing of like, okay, you keep going down that way.
Snowpiercer it.
Yeah, they didn't snowpiercer it.
I didn't get that because I got like jeans up one end and like you've got, Sparky's in there firing off his I-beams. Mm. But like Fassbender's in front of that and then everyone else is around that. Like Storm's on the outside. I felt it was quite understandable. Another great moment is just Fassbender realizing that he's not going to be able to stop this woman and just like doing the little hand thing and the wall just crutches behind him.
That's cool.
He's cool.
He's done quite cool things. I mean, the thing he did with the characters was also pretty cool.
Oh, and we should mention, so Genosha turns up in this, but there's a weird thing where they have fan service for the characters that have been named, but they don't feel like they can... Maybe it's like, is it like as the contract runs down with Disney, is it like, okay, you have to use less and less as it goes? It's like it exponentially decreases. So you can have Genosha, but you can't call it Genosha? It's only in the credits it says Genosha Security Guard.
I have no idea who any of those people are.
No, that's the thing. If you're going to have a room, if you're going to have a load of mutants, just populate them with some. It's not like you're saving them for their own standalone movies at this point.
So basically, like in The Last Stand, right? So you needed as many mutants as you can. And every character looks like a mutant. They all look like they have some sort of power. Yeah. And, you know, they've got features. They didn't even bother with this one. They're just standing there in clothes. Yeah.
There's a whole load of farmers. And it looks like it's one of the islands in New York Harbor. It doesn't look like, you know, Genosha is supposed to be... I mean, maybe that's why they didn't want to say it. It's like, maybe people won't like this idea.
It's just a commune, really, in this one.
But just the idea of mentioning it would be nice, or having a name for these characters. I haven't had a chance to look up who Celine Galeo is, but like her name is not even in the movie. Her name is said once in the movie and they don't have her surname, so it's just weird. Like, why couldn't that be Marrow? Or
it could be literally any other mutant. 70 years worth
but
of
she
characters.
Has tattoos, so she's a mutant.
Yeah. And she was a mutant detector. I don't know. Wasn't there a mutant detector in X3?
I don't know, man.
And that was like, I don't know. Her powers were all over the place. Like, you're not the only one with mind powers. Like, what are your powers? You seem to, like, the other guy has long hair.
Yeah.
That's his mutant power. He has hair that gets slightly longer when he whips it.
Yeah. That was also not a great superpower.
Yeah, it was like, this is the guy you bring, Magneto. You've really gone down the world. What happened to the big wolf guy? And
all the, yeah,
the like, guy who could throw tornadoes would really come in handy. Remember him?
Maybe he didn't come with Magneto to the commune. Maybe he's just in the Midwest throwing tornadoes.
Right? Yeah, that's his job now.
Yeah, that's just what he does. Are we coming to the end of this?
I think the end of the X-Men franchise? Yes, we are.
Yeah, I think so. Are we? Do you think so?
I think one theory I've heard is that the snap, one of the three, having three snaps so close together in each other in the
just ruins the X-Men.
No, well, no, but like, there's a thing.
You know, it's like when you don't, what was it? Don't microwave too many times. Something is just like
don't reheat it too many times.
Yeah, the gamma ray is just too many. Gives
yeah,
you
no,
radiation.
There's a thing. There's like the Infinity Stones. All of them, and all of them. There's a point where Banner says, "Well, the radiation is mostly gamma, so
gamma,
it's fine."
Yeah.
Also, like. Whenever they have flashbacks with the Infinity Stones, it's like one stone at a time. Mm. It's never someone using all of the stones and all like, within a 5-year period. So maybe that's what brings Marvel mutants to the MCU.
Oh, so you're saying they're gonna start it?
I think maybe they might.
Oh, interesting.
Because they want to do it with their own.
They're gonna Spider-Man it.
Yeah.
Okay.
And like, I mean, like, and we had so many Spider-Mans at one point. Now I think they're clever enough that they won't do. Like, we're done with Spider-Man origin stories. Babies are born coming out saying like great power and great responsibility because like it is known.
It's part of the
Yeah.
That'd be quite interesting, actually.
So
I think
if they change it, I mean, we still have New Mutants to come, which was supposed to come out earlier this year. And
I think they're
going to
reshoots.
I don't know what to do with that movie. It looked good. It looked like an X-Men horror movie. It looked like in Fox's last throes of owning the franchise, they were going to try weird and crazy stuff. And they're doing the New Mutants. The New Mutants' main story is the Demon Bear saga. So that's like jumping straight into The Dark Phoenix, which is your first movie.
Okay, so I don't know anything about that. Right, so.
It's a horror movie. One girl's powers come from, like, she thinks it's a hallucination that killed her parents, but actually, no, there is a demon bear haunting her.
Hmm.
And they're also in an asylum where people are, like, looking down on mutants. So it looked really, really good. So the trailers look like a horror movie, but with superpowers.
I think they're just going to bungle it.
Yeah. So if they're going to bring them to the MCU, they can't do the X-Men. Or if they can, they can do the X-Men have always been there, just the Avengers didn't notice. Like if you can't basically do Scott Summers, Jean Grey, Wolverine, all that stuff again. You have to branch out and do Excalibur. Yeah, just do English ones. There we go. That's it.
Whoa.
What was the team that was in Australia? There was an Australian team at one point. The Siege Perilous. There's so many.
The X-Men, the X-Force, the X-Forge. There's the East Coast X-Men. Then there's the X-Man, and then there's also, then there's like a whole thing about
Alpha Flight.
Yes, and then there's Scott Summers.
Canadians. Yeah, more Canadians. Start with Canadians.
And then Scott Summers' son.
Oh yeah, that's where you shatter the Star Jammers.
Yeah, just like,
so Scott's dad didn't die in the crash that orphaned Scott. He actually was kidnapped and taken into space and basically became a Guardian of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
So that's another storyline they could have done. Yeah,
that happens. Okay.
So yeah, to finish up, we really enjoyed the movie. Well, quite enjoyed the movie, I think you can say. There wasn't that much. Jessica Chastain is an alien who dies. Yeah, that's about it.
I mean,
Jessica Chastain is wasted here.
Kind of.
Yeah.
Yes.
She looks alien, so she's obviously an alien.
I love the fact that though the aliens disguises, like, they look like the middle managers of Doom.
Yeah.
It just felt like Jessica Chastain wanted to do an X-Men movie.
Yeah. Which is fine.
Which is fine.
But it's weird. You very rarely see like CGI effects for a woman in a kind of like well-dressed business suit get slammed through a wall.
Mm.
It's just like, you know, it's usually people in giant spandex or whatever. She's just wearing a coat and a long skirt. It kind of looks weird.
You're not used to the normalcy of the situation. Yeah.
Although those heels look like a special effect. I don't know why she just didn't change out for some more comfortable shoes.
She doesn't know any better.
She's an alien.
She's an alien. There we
it's
go.
Not even that's shoes. It. It's just the foot.
It's just the foot extending out into
So that's our Dark Phoenix spoiler cast. You've been listening to Skip Intro from BFM Radio. If you want to get in touch and let us know what you think, you can email us at movies@bfm.my. You can also find us on social media at SkipIntroMY on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Thank you for listening. We'll catch you next time.